Welcome to the Politics of Everything. I'm Amber Danes, your host and podcast producer. This is a half hour of power, a podcast dropping every week where I unpack the politics of everything, from money to motherhood, nutrition to narcissism, startups to secularism, the environment, quality, and much, much more. Our guests are seasoned in the field or topic of their choice, even if you've not heard of them yet. This is a non-partisan show. So while I love exploring varied views and get a buzz from a healthy debate of ideas, this is not a purely blue, white, green program. Please subscribe, tune in, and enjoy the politics of everything. Dr. Lucy Burns is a smart woman and she's passionate about health. She's a GP and also a lifestyle medicine doctor who has extensive training in psychological medicine. She ran a successful medical weight loss clinic, which was the inspiration for creating an online learning platform with Dr. Mary Barson called Real Life Medicine. They help people reclaim their health and weight by addressing the physiology and the psychology of weight management. Lucy's passion navigating the often fraught landscape of diet culture and societal glorification of thinness with the body positivity movement and the very real need for weight loss and its impact on our health for a large proportion of our population is really at the heart of what she does. And she helps women who've tried every diet under the sun to optimize their health and achieve long-lasting weight loss by improving metabolism and managing mindset so they can reduce the effects of chronic disease, have more energy and confidence, and stop living on the sidelines. Lucy was an expert dieter and an expert emotional eater, as she puts it. As a result, she developed obesity, fatty liver, and pre-diabetes. And as a medical doctor, this was mortifying. She has completely abandoned that traditional diet model and embraces real food lifestyle. She's a staunch believer in self-compassion as a driver of behavioral change. And I love this quote, "You cannot hate yourself thin and you cannot berate yourself well." We actually met through a course creator group called Her Empire Builder. And she also has a big business brain and is very successful in that area, let's just add. So welcome to the Politics of Everything, Lucy.
Oh, Amber, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Podcasting remotely can be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. Since day one of the Politics of Everything, I have relied on Zencaster's all-in-one solution to make the process quick and painless, the way it should be for those of us who just love great content and want to get our ideas out into the world. If you know me, I'm obsessed with quality in terms of my guests, my sound, and everything about my show has to be great the first time. I'm time poor. It's so easy to use Zencaster. I'm not tech savvy and you don't need to be either. There's nothing to download. Just click on the link and off we go. Zencaster is all about making your podcasting experience easy, and with everything from local recording to automate post-productions now in their toolkit, you don't have to leave your browser to get that episode done and done fast. I have a special offer for you, and I hopefully you can experience what I have with Zencaster. Go to zencaster.com/pricing and use my VIP code, the Politics of Everything, all lowercase and one word, to get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencaster Professional. How good is that? I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. So, did you always want to be a doctor in the medical field as a kid? Do you remember what you thought you might do and sort of, I guess, that trajectory of what you thought you'd do and how you ended up being where you are now?
No, definitely didn't want to do medicine. Wanted to be a vet. So I was mad animal fan. And in fact, I remember my very first career at the age of 4, I wanted to be an elephant trainer. And there's not many jobs in that. And so I spent a lot of time thinking I'm going to be doing vet science. I'll be a vet. It'll be great. And the sad thing was that to do vet medicine in Melbourne, you had to do physics in VCE or HSE, as it was called back then. And I'm rubbish at physics. So really bad at it. Just doesn't work for my brain. And so there was no way I was ever going to get the marks if I did physics. So it was
interesting.
Like, wow. Yeah. I think times have probably changed now.
There's probably more pathways into it, but I remember it was excruciating hard to get into anything medical.
So I didn't do physics. I did politics instead and, then got enough marks to get into medicine. And I wanted to do something where you are something, like you're a physio or you're a doctor or you're a lawyer. And interestingly, I put lawyer and physio on my list and thank God I didn't get them because I would be terrible at those two jobs.
Well, you obviously found your sweet spot. And of course, our topic today, I wanted to dive straight into that. So yes. How do you define that idea of healthy weight loss? A lot of people, it's new year, new diet, yep. New you, all that stuff. Yep. So how do you actually kind of define it from a starting point?
Yeah. So it's all to do with the process rather than the outcome. So plenty of people will lose weight doing things that provide long-term harm to their body. And so, you know, I'm not interested in that. That to me is like counterintuitive. It's like, you know, stealing from future you to get the, you know, reap the benefits of current you. And that it just doesn't work. So people do, and again, what I always say is it's not an individual's fault on wanting to achieve weight loss and the way in which they achieve it, because, you know, there's so much noise out there. There's so many people with the latest plan, the latest fad, the latest supplement, the latest fat blaster, the latest everything that is designed to help people lose weight. And the majority of them will give you short-term weight loss.
And how short term? We're talking weeks, months. I mean, for some people, I guess they do it for a life event like a wedding or, you know, some sort of milestone birthday. But, yeah, I think it's keeping it off. I think people find really hard.
Oh, absolutely. So for a lot of people, the weight loss is reasonably easy. The maintenance is very hard. And the thing, you know, one of the myths around weight management is, and I talk to a lot of our people about this, is that the thing you do to lose the weight is usually the thing you need to do to maintain it.
Yeah.
So people will do these very hard, often regimes that don't fit in with their life, but they're prepared to do it for short term because it's, the promise is thinness. And so they'll do this and then, you know, of course it's not actually sustainable. And it's not sustainable sometimes on a physiological level. So what they're doing, their hormones – we have these things called counter-regulatory hormones, they kick in. And so it doesn't matter how much willpower you have, if your hormone, your body's metabolic hormones are upregulated to put that weight back on, then that's what'll happen. Or for other people, it's things like they can only do it when their lifestyle is in, you know, perfect. So there's no stress, there's no functions, there's no anything. They're just
in a bubble of diet or something, you know, where it's all controlled and
absolutely.
That's interesting.
Yes.
I mean, we know diets don't work long term. Things like calorie restriction can actually have the opposite effect of slowing our metabolism, increasing our hunger hormones, maybe, you know, us not feeling full. So then we end up binging later on. I hate that feeling, just like, oh, I've been good all day. And then I'm suddenly eating 4 toasted cheese sandwiches at 8 o'clock at night.
Yes.
You know, how can we be more realistic on that weight loss journey, if you like, and making sure we don't get overwhelmed by rules that undermine that long-term maintenance? Like, it's like anything. It's like exercise. I'm going to do it every day. I'm going to, you know, an hour a day. And, like, it's the first day you don't, you just think, I'll throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm done, you know?
Yeah.
So, that's the thing I think a lot of people struggle with as well. How would you talk to people around that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's about unlearning diet culture. So, you know, and I do, I call myself, I was a dieting queen. I dieted for
Have you done them all? Did you do that cabbage?
Yeah. Cabbage soup, the Israeli army diet, all of them.
I mean, we're old enough to remember that. There are people out there going, what are they talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's, again, there's this, that what these diets, I'm using air quotes, which no one can see, they encourage perfectionism. And, you know, if you're not perfect, then you're cheating or you're breaking it. And so they're really words that are very, nobody wants to be thought of as a cheater or that they can't stick to something or that they're weak-willed. And so the idea, therefore, if you can't do it, then it's your fault and you're hopeless and useless. And so we have this sort of sense of shame around our inability to, and again, more air quotes, stick to it. Mm. When we get shame like that, we, rather than managing it, we just, you know, humans, you run away. Why would you want to be sitting there in a swamp of shame? You just hide. And so you don't actually ever work through the root cause. And you know, one of the things that I often say to people is, you know, being overweight or developing obesity, one, it's not your fault. I know everyone thinks it is. And they say, well, you know, no one forced me to eat this stuff. I ate it myself.
Yeah.
And two, again, you can't hate yourself out of it. You just can't.
No.
And so shame has no place in that. But that's what a lot of people think will help them. And they think that by berating themselves, they will just get better and do it harder or tougher or stricter, and that that will then give them whatever they're looking for.
And obviously that's not true. We all know that. Weight loss is also a big business as well as a health matter. You sort of adopted that low-carb way of eating some years ago, and that's worked for you to help you not just lose weight but that maintenance over a number of years. Is that the core of what you advise? Of course, everyone's got slightly different, you know, metabolisms and health conditions. How do you actually cater for varied people?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that's you've hit the nail on the head there, is that that's you must. So anybody that says the only way to lose weight is to do this, you know, only way is to eat a plant-based diet, or the only way is calorie restriction, or the only way is to be a carnivore, or the only way is to have this fat blaster shake, they've got rocks in the head, because it's not true. There are actually multiple ways to be able to maintain a healthy lifestyle, because it's more than just food. You know, there's the person, like it's a whole person approach rather than a plan approach. So when you take into account the whole person, you need to look at their, you know, things like their trauma history. Like, that's massive, you know. For obesity is often a trauma response. You need to look at, you know, what is their socioeconomic state. You know, we know that the processed food industry preys upon people in general, but the people that are most vulnerable are people with low socioeconomic status, because their food, processed food, is so cheap.
So it's a shame, that, isn't it? And I remember years ago here, like, I saw Nigella Lawson speak on stage years ago, you know, the famous chef, and she was actually really good. Even though she's successful and wealthy and all those things, she just didn't like the idea that everything had to be organic, or these chefs that talk about these ingredients which are super expensive, because she was so aware that that's not going to encourage people to eat good food. And I always thought that was really powerful to me, because, yeah, of course, that's the dream. Let's go to an organic garden and spend $8 on a piece of broccoli. But people aren't probably going to do that unless you're really wealthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's privilege in the ability to have access to what we call real food. There absolutely is. There are communities in Australia where they just don't get real food. They're remote communities. And so there is most definitely some privilege involved there. But I think, you know, again, I just say to people quite often that obesity or being overweight it's a symptom. There's a root cause. So it's not... Yes, it can then cause its own problems, particularly some medical problems related to that. But it at its core is a symptom of something underlying it. And when you can peel back the layers and work out, well, what's driving the behaviors, and it's not just one, I'd love to say, yeah, there's a magic bullet, just stop eating in the car and you'll lose 20 kilos. Like, it doesn't work like that. But what is good is it means that there's lots of levers that you can pull, and you can just keep building upon them to get to the place where maintenance of your weight loss becomes easy.
And that's what people want. It almost just needs to become the way you eat, right, or the way you live, not just a diet. Diet feels short term. Even that term feels, probably from a medical point of view, it's not. But, you know, we think of that as, I think of that as a fad or a short-term fix. I never think of it as a lifestyle.
Yeah, I know. People only ever do when they preface it with things like a vegetarian diet or a Mediterranean diet. But and so, yeah, that is the true where the word originally comes from. But, yeah, it's been hijacked to mean short-term fix of, you know, weight loss.
And I know, like, a lot of people in my circle, you know, they're all into their intermittent fasting, but see, I've got insulin resistance and I just can't do that. Like, I would literally not be able to function. I mean, I know it's supposed to help, but I've tried it.
Yeah.
I'm useless. I could easily not eat dinner, but I cannot not eat in the morning. It's just an interest. But also exercise in the morning. I don't know whether that's got anything to do with it. Like, I do a spin class and something quite high energy. So it would be really difficult for me, but I know it's funny, people just preach to you about this stuff too. Like, they get very sanctimonious, and I find that challenging. It's like, no, don't tell me what works for you is going to work for me.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But you know what? It's interesting because you're right. The intermittent fasting phase is very popular with good reason. It is extremely effective. However, the rate of failure of intermittent fasting is high because people don't always understand the science behind it.
And they do not. They just want to be told what to do. And I think that's part of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we use intermittent fasting as one of our tools, but it's never done early on, because if you have high circulating insulin, which is what insulin resistance ultimately is, then you can't access your stored fat when your insulin levels are high. So we need for insulin to drop. But the problem that happens is there's a lag time, and that lag time can be a couple of weeks. And so for this weeks where you don't have access to your fuel, and you're trying to fast, you literally run out of fuel. You feel tired, you're hungry, you're hangry, and then your brain starts saying, actually, Amber, we need to eat right now, and what is the fastest thing we can do before we fall over? And that's when it'll often go for something that is much more quick delivery of energy, which is often something
not great. Yeah, I know for me, I'm not about this for 20 years. For me personally, it's not all about me, this show, believe it or not. But, a low GI diet works perfectly for me. That's just what I do. I don't have, high sugar fruits. It's pretty boring sometimes, but it just works for me. I just feel like it maintains my weight, but also I feel good, and that's the end of the day. You need to feel good as well as look good. I think that's part of it,
One of our favorite sayings is that we all want to be hotties, and the hottie is healthy on the inside.
Oh, nice. So, I like that.
Yeah. Because, again, the outside, we're all different shapes and sizes.
Exactly. And it's really hard to – you don't want to be in that comparison thing where
It's unhelpful. We've got people that are tall, people that are short, people that are, they're naturally lean, people that are more naturally plump, and all of those are perfectly normal and should be acceptable.
And ages as stages of life. If you're going through perimenopause or, you've just had a baby, it's not the same as when you're 21 and, everything's kind of working at a higher level for most people.
No. But again, it just comes back to, and this is, I've got quite a cynical hat. One of my things is it all comes back to commodification. So youth sells stuff. Young, thin women sell things. And that's what drives this society.
Which I think the rise of, say, influencers, for example, in the wellbeing and health space has been huge, because it's such a visual thing, like using Instagram and, posting photos of yourself in activewear, and we just never had that even 20 years ago. It was all magazines. That was really it. And celebrities. They were the two things I think that sold diets to us, really.
Yeah, magazines, absolutely. And again, none of us knew everything was Photoshopped, even back then. None of us knew that. So there's this, goal. And look, I remember in my very first diet when I was about 16. And, honestly, I was the thinnest little thing at 16, but I didn't think I was thin enough. And
No. You look back at the photos and what was I wondering about? I didn't have a thigh gap or whatever the thing was at the time. It was, something. Yeah. Some insecurity. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's such a fascinating thing. And that leads into my next question about mindset. Mm. You're very big on this. It's not just about those tools to, eat this, do this kind of stuff for your lifestyle. But a lot of your programs, I noticed just jumping on your website, is with mantras and hypnosis. How does that work in tandem with what you're trying to achieve for people you work with?
So most people's only tool to manage what they're doing is willpower. And willpower isn't a tool. It exists, but it runs out, particularly when we're tired or overwhelmed or stressed or lonely. And that's when we do that thing. We press what we call the stuff it button. You press the stuff it button because it's not going well and you just eat everything in sight. We spend a lot of time teaching people about managing their mind and tools. Their tools are things like, using hypnosis or using mantras. But even reflecting on a sentence that you said earlier, which is, I eat low GI, it's a bit boring at times. One of the things I think is, rightio, boring doesn't have to be bad. We've got this idea that boring's bad. Boring can be good. Boring can be easy. I love the idea of thinking, let's make it easy. The general narrative around weight management is that it's hard. You know, we've struggled. There's the battle of obesity, the struggle, the war. It's all very negative.
Yeah, you're right. And that's going to really be tiring. Like even you saying that's making me tired.
Yeah, it is. And people go, I've battled with my weight my whole life. It's already exhausting. So what if it was easy? And things like boring can be reframed as being easy. It's like a uniform.
You just it's because it is easy to follow. It's sort of that takes away a lot of the, not choices, but I suppose the hurdles to feeling great, you know, because I'm like, no, I can't eat that. That's going to send my, you know, my glucose levels into like peaking. I've got to have sourdough bread. I've got, you know, I just know what I need. Over time, and it's trial and error and just knowing that. And I think for most of us, that basic premise, we understand we need to exercise and move our bodies more, eat less processed or unhealthy or carb-laden foods, and that maintenance thing is going to be the key. And so for people that you work with, I mean, at what point are they in maintenance mode? Is it kind of, you know, once they've reached a goal, or how do you view that?
A couple of things. The first thing I'd say is that actually most people don't know about processed food. Most people aren't aware of how harmful, like they're aware that a Mars bar is not great for you. They're not
or McDonald's aware, or something like that.
But they're not aware of the level of the processing in our food that's in what is considered healthy food. Like, you know.
So blow our minds. What sort of things are you thinking?
Certainly like muesli bars, protein bars in particular, shakes. There is not a shake in the world that is actually good for you unless you have a medical reason for not being able to ingest your protein in food. So if you've had bariatric surgery or maybe you're using a weight loss medication. But people think that having a protein shake is really good for them, and it's not. So,
And because it's so processed, what's happening to you? Like what's the problem?
So people hear protein, and protein again has a health halo.
I know. And like you can have way too much, can't you? I mean, that's also.
It's hard to overeat protein if you're getting it from whole food sources because our natural satiety signaling, which is disrupted with processed food, kicks in with real food. So the structure that food comes in, the matrix, helps our body. So
maybe chewing even, like I'm just thinking like when you're drinking a shake, to me that doesn't feel satisfying. Like it feels like a drink. It just doesn't feel like a meal replacement to me personally.
Oh, totally. Well, I'll give you an example in that particularly say protein shakes where if you're eating protein, it's actually quite labor intensive. Like you do have to chew it. When it goes into your tummy, there's all these enzymes that come out. Proteins are big, long structures. They get cleaved. They, you know, there's macerating, there's juices, there's enzymes, all sorts of things coming in to digest that protein. It creates a lot of heat in our body. All of that takes a lot of energy or a lot of fuel or requires.
And that's going to be a good thing when you're trying to like
calories.
Absolutely. Yeah, maintain your weight. Yeah.
So you can either eat the food as a whole or you can outsource all of that energy requiring stuff to a factory who will basically do it for you. And so they strip it all down to its components, repackage it, repurpose it, add a whole heap of stuff into it and then sell it to you as a weight loss shake or a bodybuilding shake or a something or other shake.
And convenience comes into that, of course, right?
Totally. Again, that's advertising though, you know.
I know. I mean, I go to the gym a couple of times a week and there's always people with like some special potion in some sort of cup, you know, or
magic.
And it's magic. Like it could be look like it's something that's with milk, or it could look like it's something that's just like a brightly coloured Gatorade-y kind of scary thing, or you know, it's not water. Yeah. Generally it's not water. That's what I always think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, I think that people are sold lies. And so the idea, therefore, then when people go, I just need to eat less processed food, they don't think that at all. They might think I need to eat less Mars bars, but they don't realise even things like, you know, wraps these days, like the amount of stuff that's in it is harmful to our overall health. Now, again, what happens though is people go, oh, but I can't get rid of all the processed food out of my diet. And I always say to people, we're not asking you to. What is helpful is to reduce it. It's not about being perfect. You don't need to be perfect. Perfect is unattainable and not helpful. But look at all of the things and see if you can reduce.
Yeah, That makes sense. And that's pretty simple. And I think people would kind of understand the logic behind that. Changing tack a little bit, your current favorite business tool, because you're not only like a smart GP and you know, advisor on weight, healthy weight loss, but you've got this great business as well. Can't be a smartphone because everyone has those. But, you know, what's the little tool at the moment that you're loving and what does it help you do?
Right this second, I am loving an AI process called Fathom, which is
what
a little.
What does it do? I've not heard of that one. So I like to get these tips from people.
So it's an app. It's a Zoom app that is free. And what it does is it just pops into your meetings and it records and then provides you with a really accurate, brilliant summary. And I often do. I often have meetings and then I'm either typing as I talk, which is hopeless because as a 55-year-old woman, I'm rubbish at typing. And so then I have to weigh it and at the end I go, oh, God, now I've got to send them the summary. And this does it for you. And
so is it sort of like Otter AI? Have you used
better,
that one?
Yeah, better. Much better, much better. Okay. Otter's not very accurate, I don't
It's find. Not accurate. It's not good with accents.
No,
which
no.
Which is just a bit sad, you know, because we live in a global world.
Yeah. This is great. It's great for group meetings. It gets everyone's names right. Like it's just – and it's free. Like even better.
Even better. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Your biggest life lesson to date and why has it been important?
My biggest life lesson is to recognize that not everyone thinks the same as me.
Which oh, really? Damn yeah. it.
I know. It's interesting. And so it took me a long time to work that out because I just thought, why wouldn't you think like this? Like it's so, you know, it's so obvious to me to think a particular way. But I guess part of that is also learning now and a lot of the skills that we will use in our programs are things like understanding trauma in particular and now recognizing that lots of behavior, lots of the way people react, lots of the things they're comfortable or not comfortable to do are often based on a trauma background. And that trauma doesn't have to mean, you know, surviving the sinking of the Titanic.
Yeah.
It can be, you know, much what people might call small T trauma, which is just unmet childhood needs often or significant social events at the time of develop, you know, that they're developing as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you define your version of success? I imagine it looks a bit different in your 50s to maybe what it did in your 20s, for example.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that. It could be the same thing.
No, it isn't. Well, because of, again, my version of success when I was 20 was probably to be thin and, yeah, have a thigh gap, which is ridiculous.
Yes, I don't even know if that's a thing anymore, but it was a bit. That, I just remember the Thighmaster being sold on infomercials.
Yeah. And there still are. All of those things are still out there preying on people. So I guess success, I mean, you know, there's personal success, business success, and then the sort of success I would like for other people. So, you know, personal success is particularly having meaningful relationships, confident with your friendship groups, which, you know, at our my age anyway, that's, you know, you now know who you want to hang out with and who you don't want to hang out with. So I love that, having time to do what is considered, what I would consider a perfect day, which doesn't necessarily mean, you know, going off to a ball and drinking cocktails. It might be just doing things like having enough time to go for a swim, having enough time to play with the dog, having enough time to have dinner with a friend or with my kids or my husband or whatever it is. So
I love that. It's just so stripped back, which I think is nice in some ways.
And I think what happens is that when your life's feeling a bit overwhelmed, that's when you do want to do that thing like run off to a tropical island. You just want to burn everything to the ground. You just want to run away because everything feels a bit hard. So, you know, if you're in that place where life's just cruising along, well, that's pretty successful.
Yeah.
Then obviously business success is to have a business that runs really well. And for us, it's not about, you know, top line revenue or money or anything like that. It's about having a business that connect that actually delivers what we want it to deliver, which I think in this, well, what I'm hoping in this 2024 is that it's about connection. So, you know, there's a well-known company out there at the moment who is providing weight loss injections to people via with, you know, technology that just basically uses texts. That company just, you know, in 18 months, it went from zero to $100 million. And there's a lot of me that goes, oh, God, and I can get a bit disheartened. But actually, I don't need to be worried about those sorts of companies because they're not providing what we're offering, which is to connect with people. Like that's one of our values, and one of the markers of good health is connection, not text message. Here's your script. That's just not how I work.
I know. Very transactional too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So for us, it's about. And obviously we do need to make some money because we can't run if you don't make
no,
money.
No, and that's the thing. I think there's no shame in that either. So, I totally hear you on
no,
that.
No, and then I guess for our version of success for our people is that they do. They have energy. They've got vitality. They feel good. That they wake up every morning and make, you know, they've made decisions that they're comfortable with. And I think that's where diet culture is trickier because people spend a lot of time in regret. You know, I wish I hadn't eaten that. I can't believe I did this. I shouldn't have done that. And so they spend all their time regretting choices. And it's not about right and wrong, good and bad, naughty and good. None of that. None of that's helpful. It's just about making choices that you're comfortable with, that you're happy with. And if you've made choices that you're not happy with, well, then what can you do next time to change that outcome, because it will come again.
Absolutely. A final message for us today on the politics of healthy weight loss.
Yeah. So I guess for me, you know, I've kind of feel like there's two baddies in the world, sort of three baddies in the world that we, you know, as a smallish business, well, small business in bobbing around in the sea of weight loss, you know, the three things that I think are fundamentally problematic to our society is the processed food industry, which is massive, monstrous, and predatory, and, you know, needs to be held to account and currently isn't. The diet industry, interestingly, I have very strong feelings about the way it makes women feel. But I will say this, that the dieting industry has been around for a long, long time, like hundreds of years. Women have been, you know, boning corsets and pulling waists in and all of that sort of stuff. So whilst I think that it's an unhelpful place, it's not new. It's not the cause of our current, you know, health issues relating to obesity, but it certainly doesn't help.
Absolutely. And if you do want to connect further, of course, with Dr. Lucy Burns and her programs, there are some details on the show notes. Until next time, take care. Thanks so much for listening today. If you've enjoyed the politics of everything, I thrive on your feedback. So please add a short review and share the podcast with your network through Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects. I'm always on the hunt for new and diverse guests, so if you or someone you know has a fresh idea you're busting to get out there, please email me at amber@amberdanes.com and my crew will get back to you very soon.